It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
The Gym Day Podcast is brought to you by Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Now batting number one in our hearts, at least he'd like to think so, it's the Gym Day Podcast.
All right, here we are, another edition of the Gym Day Podcast. We're presented by Kroger. Thank you very much for tuning in. And if you've listened to previous episodes, you know that while they're mostly evergreen and they're not too topical, it's usually guest-oriented and story-oriented, but we are going off of my beaten path today because we're going to do a topical conversation because of the alleged return of baseball. We shall see. A lot can happen in a month's time, but a lot of exciting things going forward and a lot of questions as well. So the best way to answer the questions in my mind is to talk to the scribes, that being the writers. We're going to have a little writers roundtable here today, MLB and Red style. And we have an esteemed panel here today. Let's see, should I start with seniority or should I start with smart assery level? That actually might be the same person.
Yeah. So,
from the Cincinnati Inquirer, John Fay is here. His compadre, Bobby Nightingale from the Inquirer, is along with us. See Trent Rosecrans making his Gym Day Podcast debut and back for the attack. Back on the podcast. Don't serve this guy eggs or pancakes around noontime. He is Mark Sheldon from MLB.com. How we doing, esteemed panel?
We're good.
Fantastic.
I will throw this out to you, and we didn't flip a coin as to who's going to answer this first, but did you think we would get here? Were there times where you doubted that we would actually be here? We'd be on looking at a 60-game season, an abbreviated season, with all the arguing that was going on back and forth between the two sides and the COVID pandemic and all the protocols. Did you think we would get here?
At first I did. Yeah. I was pretty confident that there would be a season. I was watching like everyone else and looking at the way things were going. And then about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, I turned very pessimistic. I really did not think this was going to happen, especially when the commissioner said that he wasn't 100% sure they could start a season. And there was talk about trying to get away from having the grievance files and all those other things. The players and the owners were all fighting either via leaks or sources or Twitter. So I got very, really negative, but I'm relieved that it's here, that we have a chance to start a season. I hope it gets off the ground. There's a lot of things still happening with the pandemic, but I'm really glad that we're here and that we're actually able to talk about what's happening forward instead of looking back at old games and history and top five lists. Those were fun to do, but I'm really ready to do baseball and cover games.
Yeah, I gotta say, during all of this, you guys were just searching for things to write about, and you all creatively came up with some great stuff. So kudos to all of you for the things you wrote during the downtime, because you did have to get creative. Trent, what says you? Do you think you surprised that we're here?
I'm not surprised we're here, quite honestly. I'm still not convinced on July 23rd or 24th that we'll be at a ballpark.
Yeah,
that's going to be more surprising to me. That's what I have a lot more doubt. There was too much to lose to get to this point, and the commissioner always had in his back pocket that 50 or 60 days, whatever, and that, you know, to me it was quite obvious they were stalling to push it until that's all the only option they had. So I always assumed we would get to this point. Because that is something that is actually inside their control. The July 23rd, July 24th actual games, that is, quite honestly, there are things out of their control. This is all paper happenings right now. This is all on paper. This is all hypothetical. When you get people into a stadium, that's a different story, and we'll see where that is in a month. So sorry for the buzzkill.
That's all right. This whole thing might be a buzzkill, but it is reality. And if you look at reality, you go back to even March and what happened the end of March to the end of April. I mean, it was amazing the amount of things that happened in 1 month. So you never know what's going to happen. And by the way, we're recording this on Saturday morning, the 27th. So if any news comes out after that, obviously we're not going to be on top of that. So just letting you know there. John Fay, 60-game season. A lot of people think, okay, we're going to put an asterisk by this. It's not going to be a legitimate winner, but everyone's on the same page. Everyone, if they do play, will be playing 60 games. What do you think of the 60-game season?
You know, I don't think anybody knows exactly what it's going to be like, but I think it's extraordinary that you're going to have a 60-game season. I think it'll be cool. I'm very curious to see how it goes. I think the game is different. When you go from 162 to 60, they have to manage things different. I think the Reds are in good shape because they have a good DH, but I think it negates the fact that they have a pretty good starting rotation, so they're going to have to figure that out. And I behind the scenes they've been working on this, and they're trying to figure out what to do, but I think that the season's going to be so based on – what your middle relief is. And if the Reds can find some middle relief, because starters are going to have four innings maybe, then to get the back end of the bullpen. So, yeah, I think it's totally different. I think fans are just curious that what's going to look like with the extra inning thing and all that. So it's really going to be different, but I don't think anyone knows exactly how it's going to be, which I think it's fun. I mean, I think, you know, fans – The owners versus the players, the fans got so tired of that. All they wanted to know, are they coming back? They're back. I think they will be interested to see what it is that we have when they come back.
Bobby Nightingale is much younger than the rest of us. As a person from a younger generation, Bobby, what do you think about these rule changes? Because there's some of us that are older are like, oh my, no, don't do that. No, a lot of us are pure. Some of us are not. What do you think about these proposed rule changes?
I'm 100% embraced it. I mean, I think it'll be exciting. Kind of piggying back off what John said. I mean, it's something different. It's something that no one's kind of been a part of. I just think the fact that every game matters, you know, every bullpen implosion, you can just imagine how the uproar of fans just on the first one when a team blows a 3-run lead. I mean, I just think it's like football now, where almost, you know, a 16-game schedule in the NFL, every game, everyone's tuned in, everyone's paying attention to it. I think it's easy for baseball fans to pay attention for 60 games. So to me, that's something that's exciting. You're going to see pitchers used differently. I think the second inning rule, baseball is the only sport where when it gets to an overtime, fans leave. So I think that's an exciting change where you put the runner on second base. It's a different twist, but I just think there's a lot to the season where I'm intrigued. I've embraced it all. If it's going to be different than 162-game season, I like that it's this different and that every game matters as much as it will.
Yeah. I've done, when interacting with fans or doing interviews, people seem to be, you know, the rule changes and the shortened season, people seem to be like taking their frustrations out on baseball as if 2020, everything isn't different. That's why I tried to tell people, like, you name one thing that isn't different during this, and they couldn't name one. So somehow just at times taking it out on baseball. Of course it's going to be different. If we get to July 23rd, 24th, and they start baseball with the protocols in place, can they pull this off? Do you think they can pull, as you sit here right now, can they pull this season off?
I think it'll be up to the discipline of the coaches, the players. You know, it's one thing to have the rules in place. It's a whole other thing to follow them. As you've seen around this community, I'm sure you drive by a restaurant or a bar and, you know, other places, and there's very little social distancing sometimes. Some places are better than others, and it's ultimately going to come out to what the players do in their private time. If they adhere all the warnings and don't bring the virus back into the ballpark with them, then yes, it can get off the ground. But that's asking a lot, especially for the teams that are in Florida, Texas, and Arizona.
Yeah, I think no one knows. I've hearkened back to this many times, but when they shut it down, we sat there with Dick Williams and Tucker Barnhart, and Tucker Barnhart said, hopefully we'll start on April 9th.
Yeah.
I mean, at that time, it seemed like, oh, yeah, it'll be just a little shutdown and we'll be back. And we know what happened since. So I think the pandemic is going to decide what happens. You know, hopefully they can get out and do it. I think they've put a lot of protocols in, but as Mark said, you don't know. I mean, are the players going to adhere to this? Because by and large, people haven't. You know, people are doing what they're doing. So I think that's going to determine. I think they have it set up. They have it, you know, they put all these protocols in that it could go smoothly if they follow them, but it's up to the players. It's up to everyone. And I think the players, if they get it, they will recover, but there's a lot of older people around the players, so managers and things like that.
And John, I'm skeptical.
Our first shot across the bow. Yes! See, I was like, man, we're really serious here. This is not like sitting in the press box at all, because normally we're just crushing each other. So first shot across the bow, see Trent, very nicely done.
I'm here to normalize things. I'm skeptical, just because, well, we're seeing it kind of work in Europe, but we're seeing a lot of things work in Europe that we don't do in the United States. You know, so far we've seen the resumption of play in, well, the CPBL, and that's Asia, and the NPB, we're all in the KBO. We're also seeing it with I have a Bundesliga game on right now. We've seen a little bit of the Premier League and the Bundesliga. Those things are going on okay, but when you look at those countries and you look at their trends, they're a lot different than they are in this country. And also kind of like piggybacking on what John said about the, you know, remember the, just going on about how things change. Remember when we were thinking there's going to be everybody in Arizona, or everybody in Arizona, Texas, and Florida? How did those plans sound a couple months later?
Not so good.
And like the NBA, you know, they have this whole system, this bubble, but they're putting a bubble in the middle of chaos, you know, and it's a lot of things can change very quickly between now and really the end of October. It's there's going to be a lot of crossed fingers.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. And, you know, no one, you have to do what you have to do during these times. We found that out just living our daily lives. If they play, our work environments are going to change immensely. One of the things, we're not going to have access to any of the players except via a Zoom call. Maybe you'll be able to, you know, you'll be able to text a player or call a player on the phone if you have that luxury or relationship with a player. But there are so many protocols in place. One, you can go to the games, but basically not leave the press box, which now at Great American Ballpark is down the third baseline, which they've totally changed that. I don't know if that's great timing or good timing or not, but have you guys thought about how you're going to do your jobs? Because a lot of the job is work in the clubhouse when the clubhouse is open to the media, trying to get relationships with players where they will give you something that maybe no one else has. But if they're just doing Zoom calls with mass media, you guys are going to have trouble coming up with stuff that other people don't have. Have you thought about how you're going to go about your jobs?
I just think we're going to lose a lot of nuance. I mean, there's a lot of times in the clubhouse, like after a game, where you don't really have a question, but you just, you know, what happened at second base in the fourth inning there. And it's just something that kind of informs you. I mean, it's a minor fact. It's not a big deal. But now you're not going to be able to ask that. And, you know, there's a lot of guys in post-game press conferences and such like that that we're not going to, you know, the team will make a few guys available through Zoom. But we're going to be talking to a lot fewer players per day than we're used to. So I think you're going to lose a ton of nuance. You're going to see a lot more editorializing in print. And you know, I'm sure there's going to be guys that are going to complain, players that are like, you know, my reaction on the field, I wasn't mad, I was just kidding. But we're not going to be able to figure that out because we're not going to be able to talk to them.
Yeah, we had a long discussion on texting yesterday about this. It's going to be totally different. The cover is going to be completely different. We're not going to have – because you know how it works. It's, you know, we stand in the clubhouse and you might not think you're going to talk to someone, but then all of a sudden it occurs to you, oh, I could ask him about that and that kind of thing. That's all gone. So it's, you know, you're going to talk to the players who had something to do with that game that night, not the nuance stuff that you would get previously.
And a big thing is, you know, there's a difference between what you see on camera and when the guys walk away from the camera or when the cameras walk away. Usually, and this is a little sausage, how the sausage is made, but usually at post game, even the big one, even the big, like with the starting pitcher, all the questions will be asked on camera. Those cameras walk away. Those guys then kind of relax a little bit. And when they see me, John, Mark, Bobby, guys they see every day, especially on the road, there is a little bit more familiarity and, like Bobby said, nuance. And they can say, well, they can explain it where they're not being on camera. So you can kind of go a little bit better so that we can convey that meaning a little bit better. There is so much of that that is going to be lost because, you know, I often say when I talk to young journalism students or whatever, which is a scary thought, but I say your question should never be more important than the answer. So a lot of times you'll hear people on Twitter say, oh, that question was so bad. And it's like, no. A lot of times you ask questions stupidly because you know that's how it's going to get a good answer. And that gets lost when everything is recorded and shown on video. The answer is more important than the question. And I think that ability can be lost, especially when every post game is available and they're going to be streaming and Channel 5 can show me looking like an idiot. And it's going to show me looking like an idiot, but which is not hard to do, but maybe it elicits a good answer. And so many people will be focused on the stupid question as opposed to the good answer that a stupid question gets.
Welcome to my world.
And I think, honestly, that the one thing that happens is, like, when we're in the clubhouse and let's say a player is the GOAT of the game and maybe he doesn't want to talk on camera for whatever reason, and then we can go up to him and, you know, or maybe, you know, it's individual. You just go up and you ask a couple of quick questions and you get a really good answer, or the non-answer may even be better. But now that player doesn't have to accept the request to go appear on camera. It's a lot easier to say no when you're not talking to us face to face. Sometimes it's easier just to do the interview and move on. But now they have to go physically out of the clubhouse into a spot where the camera location is to appear on Zoom. And that's that, again, the nuance is going to be lost. I think there'll be some issues. I think players will actually, I know maybe in bigger markets won't say this, but I wouldn't be shocked if players actually miss having us in the clubhouse to a degree, because we can parse out the nuance of the conversation. We have institutional knowledge of what goes on. And I think their views, like I think Bobby said, people might be more prone to editorializing or not giving, you know, accurate information because they don't ask the question in a more intimate setting.
Do you guys foresee non-cooperation from some players because of what went on with the labor dispute, that the media might represent the, not that we're representing the owner's side, but just not wanting to cooperate? Do you sense that happening?
I don't think it'll be any different than them not cooperating in person. I mean, we all know who those guys are. There's around the league, there's some guys that have better reputations than others, but
who are they, Mark?
What's that?
I said, who are they, Mark? Name names.
Yeah. But I'll say that it was a good sign that Tucker Barnhart, the union rep, got on Zoom the other day along with Dick Williams. And if that tells me how it's going to be going forward, at least in Cincinnati, I would be encouraged by that. The fact that the union rep, who's in on all the conversations, was free to talk and optimistic and enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, I think what he said, what Tucker said, was really revealing. I think the players get it. that he said the ramifications will last for a long time. I think, you know, we talk about them coming back, but it went on way too long in the mind of fans, pretty much everyone who follows the game, that why couldn't they get to this agreement more quickly? And I think Tucker said that, you know, as a baseball fan, what happened was really bad. I mean, they should be playing by now. You knew they were going to come to an agreement eventually, but why did they delay it so long? I think it really hurt. I think when they start playing, it can go away, but I think fans really got tired of this back and forth between the two sides.
It's funny though, like, the immediate reaction seemed to me, it was almost, at least from what I heard, and this is all, you know, you get your news filtered now, and my Twitter feed is not, I don't think it's representative of the world at large, or God, I hope it's not. But, you know, I went from, oh, I'm never watching again, I'm so sick of these guys, to baseball's back! Woohoo! We're ready! Yay! And I saw a pretty quick flip. I think as humans, we have short memories and we get what we want. Sure, there might be a nagging thing in the back of the minds that, oh, they screwed this up again. But when we are so deprived, I think a lot of people are going to be back and watching it. And then now after the 2022 strike, no. That's going to be tougher. So when we don't have a 2022 season, I think they're going to be harder to forgive. Now it's just supply and demand. There's supply of stuff on a Tuesday night to watch that's different and new. So,
I dare you to bring that bad mojo to the Jim Day podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that has been C. Trent Rosecrans. We're going to wish him well and no 2022. That's a whole nother podcast. We hope that doesn't happen. Just kidding. You can stay.
Damn. I wanted to leave.
Yeah, I know.
Let's put Debbie Downer in timeout. Come on.
Yeah, we should put Debbie Downer in a timeout. It's terrible.
My bacon.
Well, that was the other side of it. If they had not played, I think the damage would have been irreparable. I think it would have taken 10 years to recover because there's no way you can explain to a fan on either side why we didn't play.
Yeah.
If they can do it safely, I've written it from the beginning. If you can do it safely, you got to play. And when it looked like they might not, it's like, oh my God, you know, what are they going to do this to this sport?
Well, even me, at least publicly, Mr. Positive, I was like, I mean, they even had me shaking my head like, oh, this really can't be happening. But right now, cooler heads have prevailed, sort of. It kind of got to the end game, and that being where it is now, a 60-game season. And let's talk baseball here. A 60-game sprint, geographical schedule. As we record this, the schedule has not been released, but if you – everything that's been out there, it's going to be NL Central, AL Central schedule, NL East, AL East versus each other. You'll play the NL Central teams 40 games. You'll play the AL Central teams 20 games. What do you think? Have you thought about how this season is going to unfold and how, when you put aside, though, yeah, I wish it was 162 or even wish it was 81. But it's not a 60-game sprint, how exciting that can be.
I think for the first time in a while, it's every team actually has a legitimate chance to make the playoffs, even the bad teams. I mean, the Pirates at the All-Star break last year were only a half game behind the Cardinals.
Right.
And by the end of the year, they finished 20 games back. But if you're a Pirates fan, you know you're going to enter a rebuild. The next few years really don't matter. This is kind of your one chance to be like, hey, you know, if you get off to a 8-2 start, you actually have a legit chance for the first time and maybe the only time for a few years.
The sets up very well for the Reds. I mean, you got to remember going into the spring training, the other NL Central teams didn't do a whole lot to make improvements or upgrades. I mean, I suppose they still can between now and the new opening day, but The Reds were looking pretty good in that division to begin with, and now they're going to play 40 of their 60 games against those teams. I think that bodes well. They're more set up for a DH than the other teams are, and they have a better pitching staff. Like John said, relief pitching is going to be huge because of the shorter outings. But I think a 60-game schedule for the Reds is a good thing. And like Bobby said, teams that were, you know, may have had no chance going into this year before definitely have a chance now.
I'm a little disappointed there isn't an expanded playoffs for this. A lot for the same reasons that Bobby said, is that there's so many teams that have these chances. And there's something about just the simple math of three division winners and then two next best records. Now, I haven't seen any tiebreaker scenarios.
My next question was, what are they going to do? There's going to be tie. I mean, 60 games, there's going to be several teams that are going to be tied.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's going to be the normal tiebreakers, but even then it's going to be tough. I don't know. I think and from what I understand, maybe John, Mark, Bobby know better than I, but I've talked to some people that this is actually on the table any year until they start playing. They can still negotiate with the union and the league about the playoff format. So I don't know that this is set in stone. I would assume it's status quo and it's probably going to happen, but I think there's a way to change it up until the time the games start. If it's agreed upon in certain ways, which we know these two sides are always agreeable, can make quick work of anything. So, but yeah, I just think I hate a 16 team playoff. I hate that more teams would make the playoffs than half, but in this year, kind of going back to what Bobby said earlier, why not this year? If any time, can you imagine how fun would that be if the Reds, if everybody got into the playoffs, 16 teams got into the playoffs, that 16 team playoff, that sprint of a playoff after a sprint of a regular season, man, like, you know, and then a guy like Burke Badenhop comes in and is the key to a game and somebody going into the playoffs, you know, just like a random person out of the blue, that would just be a lot of fun, and like everybody would hit the showers and just be so excited. It's just so much. I think it's a missed opportunity not to have that. But you know, hey, I don't think we'll get to October anyway. So, you know, maybe it's all moot.
Debbie Downer again, not getting to October.
One of the things that, if you looked at some of the iterations before, the Reds at one time they had three divisions and they were in with the Dodgers. So I think from the Reds standpoint, it worked out pretty good. If you're in with the Dodgers, I mean, that's a kind of a tough thing to do. I think that's when they were talking about playing in Arizona.
Which, right.
The whole time I'm thinking, have these people been to Arizona in July and August?
First thing out of, yeah. I'm like, have you been there at 7, 8 o'clock at night? It's still 110 degrees.
I got off the plane once and I was, you know, I'd gotten in the night before a series started. I was waiting for my rental car at 9 p.m. It's dark. And I'm like, it is hot. And I look at my phone and it was like 115 degrees at night.
Yep.
And that happens in July and August.
Yeah, they say, well, it's a dry heat. Well, I don't, it's 115 is 115. Go experience it. Certainly won't want to play a 9-inning game. And then do it the next day as well. Yeah. We once outside, they had a game, I think it was in August, in Phoenix, and it was blazing. It was like one of those record days, 115. It was near 120. And I fried an egg on the pavement outside of the TV truck. It actually fried. It was unbelievable. Yeah, so.
And then you ate it for brunch. just to yeah.
Well,
did you cook up a little bacon too?
See, Mark Sheldon, we have early. To see now you've gone there. We've got to refresh the listeners' memories
we
here.
Remember this from the last podcast. It's okay.
Mark Sheldon vehemently against breakfast served at lunchtime. which often happens day games, particularly Sunday, in MLB media dining areas, which is just great dining. But
not this year.
Yeah.
No breakfast this year.
I want breakfast at breakfast time. I don't want breakfast at lunchtime. And
GD Wright right there.
So that's where that comes from. But you don't have to worry about this year. It's the delicious box lunches.
I'll eat my breakfast before I come to the park.
Yeah. Well, we're allowed to bring food now. Not that we weren't before, but they're encouraging to bring your own food.
Can't wait.
I actually might, I'll be searching for stories as well. I'll be like, what did the writers bring to eat today segment? We'll be opening up and seeing what you got in there.
Are you, as a tier two employee, are you allowed to mingle with us mere tier threes?
I don't think I'm tier two. I'm not allowed near the players either.
You're not tier two?
I do not think so. At this, as we speak, no, there is going to be no one, not even my ugly mug, near the players.
You can do a David Letterman gag where you may I please see the contents of your bag, and then
you
go through it and give a canned ham at the end or something.
Yeah. I'm surprised you didn't hear the players celebrating that I won't be around them at all. No, they're trying to cut off literally as much access to the players as possible, put them in the most possible bubble. Although, once they leave the stadium, they're free to go where they want, so kind of defeats the purpose a little bit there, but it is what it is. I'm not sure you can quarantine people for 2 or 3 months. That would be very difficult, especially with families and kids. But no, I will not be around the players. I will be in Zoom heaven just like you guys. So,
where will you watch the games?
Well, that is, as we record this, up for debate as well. Home games, I will be, I think I'm going to be allowed in the lower bowl. But not in the camera well.
You're tier two then, brother.
Well, no, your photographers will be down there. There'll be some photographers down there. So
good point.
There'll be a select few that will be down there. But I think
do you guys think the spring training will be like? I mean, it's just hard to it's so short. I mean, I wonder what they're gonna do.
I think you're gonna see some ugly games early on just because they haven't had the normal spring training games. Hitting is all about timing, and I think the pitchers are going to be ahead of the hitters come the season time, just because the pitchers or the hitters aren't going to get enough live ABs, real live ABs. I think the teams have the option of playing 3 or 4 exhibition games. I'm not sure. There's going to be some teams that probably won't play any. They don't want to go through that headache.
The Cardinals have said they don't.
Yeah, the logistics of it, of just someone's got to travel somewhere else, and that's why you have a 60-man taxi squad so that you can get as much. It'll be a lot of inter-squad scrimmages.
I can see, maybe if, say, the Cardinals open at the Reds, maybe you do a little bit the day before,
yeah.
Especially if it's a 3-game series, so right. You're the other guy before. Maybe something like that, the Chicago teams, the New York teams, the L.A. teams. That's honestly about all I can see actually doing that.
Right.
Yeah. And then you throw in the extra deal with the guys that are out at in Mason at Prasco Park. It's going to be so wildly different than anything we've ever covered. I mean, with spring training 1.0, you walk around the complex, you can see different guys in different spaces. I mean, all we're going to be able to see is basically what's happening on the main field at GABP, and that's it. We can't see the bullpens. We can't see anything else. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think the first few days there'll be a lot of interest in covering it from a lot of different outlets, and I think that'll wane, and it'll be just us probably for a few of those days, and we'll see what we see. But I think it'll be interesting and different.
Well normally training starts so slowly. They build up very slowly. That's not going to be the case. I mean, you got 3 weeks, so they're going to have to try to get ready as quickly as possible. I think it's going to be different without the games too. That's just it's a whole different way of looking at things.
I think the biggest thing will be, like, media wise spring training really serves as access for media. I mean, that's kind of the biggest perk of it. now it's going to be almost like we're all, we saw the Japanese media following Shogo around and watching his batting practice and kind of analyzing his batting practice. I could see us having to be like, you know, Joey Votto hit 3 homers in batting practice today. That's what we're going to have to go off of. And his power looks back.
Yep.
I can't wait to read your story on that, Bobby.
Well, it's
the most homers in batting practice this week.
It's going to be interesting. And going back to what John had said earlier, with these expanded rosters, man, you're going to see a new pitcher. Once the starter goes out of the game, you're going to see a new pitcher every half inning. And those guys are just going to be firing on all cylinders. So I think the hitters early on are going to have a struggle, man, because the pitchers, they're going to be working half innings or one inning, and they can get ready for that in 3 weeks.
What's the over under on combined no hitters this year?
Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
2.5.
Yeah.
By the way, don't forget the 3-batter rule is still in effect for those relievers. They can't just situationalize. They got to pitch to 3 guys if it's the start of an inning.
Yeah.
Thank God, actually, now that we think about it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad that rule, even though it was somewhat maligned, I'm kind of happy to have it in there, especially when you have 30-man roster to start the season for the first 2 weeks and then 28 for the 2 weeks after that.
Yeah.
That's one of the funny things. They're putting the runner on second in an extra inning game. That's going to slow the game. That 10th inning is going to be so slow. If you have a fast runner on second base, you're going to be throwing back, stepping off and everything. So it's going to slow it down initially. But the one thing I thought is, gets down. Yeah. Well, I think, if Michael Lorenzen isn't pitching, you want him to be your guy on second base. I mean, I think
that's a great point.
I'm sure the Reds have looked at all this stuff, but there's a lot of little nuances where you can do things differently. But yeah, he's the guy. He's probably the second or third fastest guy on the team. That you put him out there and see what happens. If he hasn't pitched or he pitched the day before, why not use him rather than waste him?
Will they be bunting that guy over?
On that, yes. But following up on John with Lorenzen then has flexibility to stay in the game, either as a pitcher or as an outfielder. He has the flexibility there if it does go to an 11th. That's a really, John, I hadn't thought about that, but he's a 10th inning specialist almost.
Yeah. Will they be bunting that guy over? I think we're going to.
I think it depends on where you are in the order.
Yeah.
If Joey Votto or Moustakas is up, probably not. But I think if your ninth hitter's up, probably do.
But it's also going to be, we're going to see, it's a huge home field advantage. Just like in college football, where it's an advantage to have the second possession. Well, the home team's going to have the second possession every time. They know what to do. So if the visitors score one in the top of the inning, in the bottom of the inning, you're not going to bunt. You're going to go for the win. You're not going to go for the tie. Or maybe you do go for the tie to make sure you have it. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. In the minor leagues, though, I think we've seen something, I think, was it like 75% or somewhere around 75% are decided after one inning.
Yeah.
So we're not going to see a lot of the 11th and 12th and 13th.
Well, I think if it's a permanent thing, Billy Hamilton's career will be extended.
The Giants are pretty happy to have him, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Scoring on a ball deep in the hole of the infield.
And he's not going to play before the 10th.
Yeah,
he's going to be like that emergency catcher, that you only use it for certain situations if you have to. But once you get to the 10th, put him in there.
Especially
the
top of
the 10th.
How
do you feel about that? I'm curious. What are your thoughts, Billy? Are you joining the podcast right now?
I retired my Billy Hamilton impression.
What?
Boo! Jim Day.
I'm getting booed on my own podcast. You do realize I can edit this, right?
Somebody can edit it for you, yes.
No, I edit my own podcast. I am a team of one. You are looking at the team. I am the promotions department. I am the engineering department. I am the production department.
Are you the salesman too?
I'm not the salesman.
Oh, Mr. Jim Day does it all except for make the money.
No, I got you.
Take the money.
You got to have good content before you, you know, indulge in selling it. Which, by the way, is a great lead-in, Trent. Thank you very much. We'll get back to our discussion, our Writers Roundtable, after these messages from our friends from Kroger.
Hey Reds fans, this episode of the Jim Day Podcast is brought to you by Mission Tortilla Chips. Crispy, tasty, and ready to dip into anything, our Mission Brown Bag Chips add just the right bite of flavor to any snack with just four simple ingredients and sea salt. Be sure to get Mission Brown Bag Tortilla Chips available at Kroger stores throughout Reds country. Go Reds!
At Kroger, we always do our very best to make sure we've got you covered. Restocking our shelves with help from one of the country's biggest supply chains. Which means every day we're busy getting everything you need, from a fresh batch of berries to basics for your bathroom. We've even got dinner ready if you need it. Mmm, that does look tasty. And we'll continue to bring our A game to get you what you need when you need it most. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
All right, that was shameless. That was a beautiful lead-in. That wasn't even planned. But we thank Kroger, the fine folks at Kroger, who are doing a bang-up job through this pandemic. I want to backtrack, boys. We just talked about the starting a runner on second base in extra innings. We got into the how that might come off, but where do you feel? How do you feel about it? A lot of people are against it. I've been on record, and I can't believe this actually came out of my mouth publicly, but I have been on record saying I'm for ties. I don't want to mess with the way the game is played by, I think, putting a runner on second base is gimmicky. Not that ties aren't gimmicky, but you're not messing with the rules of baseball. There have been ties in other sports at other times and still are. Over a 162-game season. Now, over a 60-game season, I can see why they might want to do this. But over a 162-game season, you know how extra inning games messes up everything. It messes up your rotation. It messes up your sleep schedule. It messes up your travel schedule. The fans leave the ballpark. The fans tune out of games on TV. There's not many positives to extra innings other than us old purists saying, that's the way it's been and that's the way it's going to be. But over 162-game season, ties make sense to me. Your thoughts? Silence. I've silenced them. Thanks for joining us for the Jim Day Podcast.
I'm going to let Bobby go first because I know Bobby is all about this millennial ball.
Yeah, I saw Trent say he liked ties, so I encouraged everyone on Twitter to boo him.
I see nothing wrong with ties.
It's gimmicky, but college football makes it work. Hockey, you have the shootout. Soccer, you have a shootout. You know, penalty kicks.
Not in the regular season of the Premier League. Gimmicks. They have ties.
Yeah.
Well, like World Cup.
Or is it a draw? The world's most popular sport has ties. Right, until the playoffs. And I'm fine. Here's the thing. Like, overtime hockey, they have a limit on it. And they have the ties, and you also have the scoring system and all that. I'm fine with just a tie in hockey. Like, that was the old one with that 5-minute overtime and then a tie. I'm good with that. But that makes playoff hockey so much better. That's why overtime playoff hockey is the best thing in sports.
It's outstanding.
And that's because in the regular, it's different than the regular season. Mm-hmm. And it's saying that, well, in the regular season, a tie is okay. And the playoffs, you play till the end. And I think that's a good way to do it. Especially with a shortened season, this gimmick is going to be weird and it's going to decide. It may come down to who has Billy Hamilton, and that could factor a playoff spot. Now, I'm fine. This year, everything's out the window. I just think you look at some of the foreign leagues. I know the KBO and the NPB, after 12 innings, it's just a tie. They usually have those rules, so it's not trying to implement anything new. I see nothing wrong with that. But I get baseball that you want to have a winner and you play. I think we should just reserve that for the playoffs.
I generally don't like rules where they change the format of the game after a certain inning or a certain period in hockey. In the overtimes in hockey, you take a guy off the ice, it's becomes 3-on-3, I believe. And
4-on-4.
And I don't like messing with the schematics of sports, whether it's football, baseball, hockey, et cetera, soccer. I like it to be consistent. And if a tie keeps the numbers consistent, and if one thing that baseball has going for it over its legacy is statistics and uniformity to the numbers, and they all mean the same thing in 1900 as they do in 2000, I would prefer not to have the runner on second rule and just stick with the tie. However, I just like everyone else, this year is a great year to experiment and mess around with things and tinker and try stuff out.
Well, I think historically they did have some ties because you couldn't play at night. So, You know, if it went so many innings, they had a tie. All the historical.
How many of those games did you cover, John?
Oh,
hi-yo.
But one of the
Wrigley Field,
the great pitching performances about the Reds ended in a tie. I tried to look it up. I couldn't real quickly, but yeah, I could go with the ties. I think it's kind of gimmicky to do this, but I think it's going to – the first time it happens is really cool. I think I covered the first overtime college football game ever. It was Miami versus UC, and everybody's like, oh, God, we don't even know the rules. But they it was fun. So I think this year, if people like it, I think it may be back. But, everything's going to be different this year, so I think – you know, to try, it's a fine thing to do.
I hated the wild card at first, you know, the two wild cards in the one game playoff. I hated it at first, and I've come to like it. So I could be 100% wrong. I've been wrong a lot. People on here know that.
You've been wrong a lot.
We keep a list. But if you think about, like, if a game ends in a tie in the 11th inning, say, you know, after the 11th inning, it ends in a tie. Well, teams in that 11th inning are going to change the way they play, knowing the game ends in a tie. You're almost going to have kind of the runner on second. Teams are going to be bunting. If you're playing for one run, otherwise the game ends in a tie. To me, you're kind of taking the same strategy just without the runner on second.
I'm for ties after 9 innings.
Basketball. You're going to need a shot clock.
Yeah, I'm for ties after 9 innings. I don't even want to go to 11 innings.
Jim, you want to tie after the 7th so you can go out and hit the streets.
That is not true at all. I want a full 9-inning game. But I'm just for someone, and you guys are the same way. You've been over 162-game season. You've seen these extra innings. I mean, how many times in the press box or even as announcers where you're saying, yes, we're going to the 13th. Woo! Awesome. Everyone's like, oh, gosh, we're going to the 13th inning.
I remember in San Francisco a couple years ago, that because it was a late game or whatever, I was at the Enquirer at the time. And when I filed my story, the morning desk shift was already in. So that's who I filed my story with. I said, hey, you guys got in here at like 5 a.m. My story, they were already in the office because we went like 18 innings.
Yeah. Well, if
I remember Wilson Valdez pitching against the Reds in Philadelphia in the 19th inning game and getting a win.
Yeah. Oh, that
yeah.
game.
Yeah.
Forever. That was a year to the day after the infamous game in San Diego that went 18 innings.
Oh, man. Both Josh of those were just brutal.
And,
I mean, how
well, the Wilson Valdez, I got my Enquirer. I was at home. I wasn't at the Enquirer at the time, but I got my Enquirer before with John Fay's running story. I got my Enquirer before that game ended.
Wow. Yeah, I think it, in that case where you go 18 innings, it affects you for a week or so. It was always
a career
in a range.
For Aaron Harang,
a 60 game season, do you want that to affect it? So yeah, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I'm fine with the runner on second base during this season. I think they need to end the game as quickly as possible. Over the 60-game season just because of the sprint and the health of the players. But over 162, man, I mean, how many times have we seen a 14th inning? There's no one in the stands. They've left. They're gone. So is that exciting that we're ending the game with very little people in the stands except for Woo Guy?
That's you.
No.
You won't have the Woo this
that
year.
That is the all-time secret that Jim Day is the Woo guy.
Let me tell you what.
He sits down there. That's why you hear it so well on the microphones that pick up from the thing. It's Jim Day. Like, Tom and
First thing I thought about when they said no fans in the stands, I'm like, well, that sucks, but at least there's no woo.
Now we'll hear it and we'll all know. You'll be exposed.
No, absolutely not. While we're on that subject, no that'll fans just be, in the stands. I mean, this
does
is
that mean
gonna,
no Redzilla?
You know, I bet you they still roll out Redzilla.
Bobby loves Redzilla.
Bobby's crushed.
They'll be shooting those things up into the press box because you guys will be the only ones there.
Actually, I
shoot Purell in the press box. I'm good with that. But other than that, I don't want anything.
No fans. I mean, it's as much as we say, wow, we can't wait to watch some baseball. It's going to be very, very different and very, very quiet. Although I think you're going to see the some of the teams pipe in some crowd noise in the stadium. I think you're going to see the walk-up music still. You're going to see the intros. You're going to see the fireworks after home runs. I think they're going to do all that. But during play, it's going to be awfully, awfully quiet.
I hope the mics don't pick us up. Me and Mark, what we talk about.
Well, we're going to have a 7-second Joey Votto strike three called delay, if you know what I mean.
Somebody's got to be quick on that mute button as soon as they see strike three with Joey. Mute. Producer's
and he's
job
not
just
the only
got a little
one.
Bit harder.
Yeah, he's not the only
I
one.
Will say
it's going to be very quiet.
It's going to be hard without the fans. It'll be hard.
Yeah.
Because they add a lot to the game and the noise. I mean, yes, the woo in the 13th inning against the Pirates detracts from the game, but the general consensus is the fans make the game exciting. It's a lot of fun and a key moment when they can get organically excited about all this that's going on. And you know, just watching, you know, Korean games and games in Taiwan, and now I've watched some English Premier League soccer, not having the fans, even with piped in noise, is just a tough deal. It's better than nothing to be able to watch it on TV and have the game on, but it's you definitely miss the excitement.
Well, the five of us know this really well. Like when they close the press box, because they have open windows that roll open, and when they close it for rain or Mark being too cold, it can be – it's just so different. It's terrible, right, guys? I mean, you just –
And you can hear
not
every conversation.
Same.
Every conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, my bad.
Something you don't want to hear. Some people that don't shut up.
I had a guess before the end of the season they will have fans in Great American.
Really?
It's not the epidemic is not as bad here. The numbers have dropped a little bit. If you put 20,000 people in there, you can social distance. If you're with your wife or whatever, you can sit next to her and then three seats over. I think they probably will. I think Governor DeWine's a big baseball fan. I think they will.
He's a season ticket holder of the Reds.
Yeah, I would guess. I mean, it's again, you know, Tucker Barnhart saying we're going to start on April 9th. So everything could change. But I think if everything goes as it has recently, I wouldn't be surprised if in August we have fans in this.
I think the biggest thing for John's point is we're going to have games. It's going to overlap with college football season. If they have fans at Ohio State, you got to have fans at Great American.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to do everything they can to have fans at Ohio State and the NFL and those kind of things. But especially Ohio State in Columbus, that might be the bell cow for this around the state.
Well, but ultimately, the numbers are going to tell the story of the pandemic. If cases are spiking like they are in Texas and Arizona, and they are seeming to be going up around here, you're not going to have fans.
Well,
I don't know that you'll
know
have baseball.
The plans are in place to social distance as far as selling tickets and where they would sit. Those plans are already ready to rock and roll. All they would need to be given is the okay to let fans in.
I saw Chicago. They're thinking about selling tickets to the rooftops just because they're different addresses, so they don't count as Wrigley Field. So it's like 20% capacities, maybe 50 people. But can you imagine how much people would pay if you're like, you know, you're one of 200 people to get to watch a Cubs game?
Yeah.
Even if it's tops?
Wow.
Opening day, those tickets will go pretty high.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt about that. All right. Who on the field? Who are you excited to watch? Who do you think is going to shine during this 60-game season as far as the Reds go?
I want to see Shogo. I mean, he's kind of the one free agent that is the biggest wild card. You kind of know what you're getting with Moustakas, Castellanos, Wade Miley. You kind of know what you're getting, but he's such a wild card. I mean, is he your center fielder of the future? Is he going to be playing left field? It seemed like in spring training, he's kind of embraced the on-base type role. He doesn't seem like a guy that's going to hit more than, you know, 5 or 10 homers a season in a regular 162-game season. So I'm most interested just to see him, see how he translates. Guys have a good track record, actually, of their first year from Japan coming over to Major League Baseball. It seems like they do well. So, and especially for him, I mean, having to sit out the pandemic like he has, and, you know, no one could imagine this would have been how his first year played out.
I think since Bobby took my answer, I'll say Nick Senzel. Number one, he was on the border of not being ready for a regular opening day, and, you know, he was off to a slow start, but the fact that it's year two of his career, and, you know, he had some pretty good things going on until he made a swing adjustment and then got hurt. But I think a fully healthy Nick Senzel in his former batting approach, and, you know, having that much more experience and possibly being turned loose to play other positions if they don't just stick him in center field. I don't know what they're doing yet with that. I think he could be a pretty dynamic player. I'm just somebody I'm interested in seeing.
I'd say Trevor Bauer. I mean, everyone assumes he's going to be pretty good, but he was really bad last year with the Reds. And, you know, he's a guy that he's been throwing a lot. So I think he could come out really strong. I think if he's good, that really cements the rotation.
You know, how refreshing is it that we have so many different available options? It's kind of crazy. I mean, we haven't even mentioned Nick Castellanos yet. And my answer, of course, is Shogo. I think we all know I have I lived in Japan, so I
I haven't heard that.
What? Are you sure?
I have another story coming out, I think, tomorrow.
I didn't know this.
Something else.
Really?
New information.
Wow. Breaking news here on the podcast. Yeah, we got him.
Yeah, so, but I mean, Nick Castellanos, how about Joey Votto? I mean, what kind of Joey Votto do we see? You know, Sonny Gray coming back, Luis Castillo. There's just so many huge answers to this that it's kind of refreshing. And that's kind of fun. And it's not, these are all like positive. Like, I can't wait to see this guy. And we have a guy who hit, 16 homers in August that we haven't even brought up? This is fun. And
or the guy that hit 49 homers for the season.
Yeah. That's kind of the excitement of all this. And I think it gives us – there are four guys here who have to figure out how to write something different every day. And it gives us chances to write that. And I that's pretty exciting, honestly.
Yeah, I just think the whole, you know, everyone was kind of down that, it might not happen. There's not going to be a season. But I think once they decide to have it, I think everybody's kind of like, oh, this is going to be cool. It's going to be so different that it kind of intrigues you. So we'll see. But, yeah, there's a lot of different guys on the Reds to watch and see. It's going to be fun.
There's been a lot made about the Reds' rotation of having five or six guys that are solid and, you know, three guys you could legitimately run out there on opening day. Over 162-game season, that's a massive benefit or an advantage. Do you think that's 60 games kind of takes away the Reds being loaded, or you think it's just the opposite, that I mean, anytime starting pitching is everything. But does it take a little bit of the advantage away of having, you know, a deep rotation over 162 games, whereas a 60-game sprint, these guys aren't going to get as many starts? Where do you stand? Is that a disadvantage or still an advantage for the Reds?
I think the better pitchers you have, it's always it's always an advantage. And, you know, you'll still have guys going every, you know, you're not going to have a four-man rotation this year. You might even see a six for at some point, just to get these things done. Or you have two guys in, say you do have a five-man rotation, you have three of those guys, maybe one who's in the rotation, and then two other guys, and say like Lucas Sims and Tyler O'Malley, who then are available for 3 and 4 inning stints every couple days. That can really help you, that depth there. There's a lot of ways to look at this. And honestly, if there's one person I want figuring this out, it's Derek Johnson. That's a huge advantage. Derek Johnson, we saw what he did with the Brewers a couple of years ago in their rush to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And so that he is someone who is thought differently and is, you know, you want to talk about the plans that are in place for selling tickets and getting people in place. Derek Johnson's been thinking about this, and that's a guy that I would, you know, if I wanted to choose someone to have in my corner, how to strategize all this, that's a big positive.
I think the Reds are better set up than any team almost, but partly because of Derek and his college coaching experience. He's done the 60-game schedule much of his life. But then, like, you know, Trent said, you could have Luis Castillo early on do 4 innings or 3 innings and then have Lucas Sims or O'Malley backing him up. And that gets you – you wondered how you're going to get to the back end of your bullpen to Garrett, Lorenzen, and Iglesias. That's how they're going to do it probably early on. And I think that sets up really well for them. You know, and then when they can extend out and get a little bit later in the season, that's just going to be a nice weapon to have. I think the Reds really do set up pretty well for the 60-game sprint.
I think it helps them a little bit because they had a really good rotation. And if you have a good rotation, you have a chance to win every night. So you want to play as many games as possible. 60 games is much fewer. And you talk about Lucas Sims or Tyler O'Malley. They're not as proven as the guys they had in the rotation. So I think it hurts them a little bit. I think, again, Derek Johnson, what he does is big. And, you know, they've had a lot of time to think about this. So I think they'll come out with a plan. But I think if you went into this season with that rotation, I would have picked them like second in the division. I don't know as much. They didn't address the bullpen very much. They brought in Pedro Strop. Was the only guy they brought in. So the bullpen wasn't very good last year. So I think they're going to have to figure some things out.
I think you look at the start Luis Castillo had last year, and I think you have to be encouraged saying, you know, these guys are fresh. If they're only going 4 to 5 innings at the start of the season, I think that plays to their advantage. I mean, they don't have to pace themselves. You look at guys like Sonny Gray and Trevor Bauer, how nasty of stuff they have. If they're only planning to pitch 4 or 5 innings at least at the start, you know, I think that makes them that much better of pitchers, thinking, you know, I have to throw 7 or 8 innings each start.
Who is the team to beat in the division? Who you got?
I think it has to be St. Louis. I mean, just the defending division champs. They have the pitching. They have the defense. Offense was their problem last year, but, you know, I feel like that's an easier fix than if your pitching struggles. And I like their bullpen. As long as they stay healthy, I think they're, you know, I think every team's a little bit clumped together, at least the top 4 teams in the Central. But I think they have a little bit of an edge on everyone else.
Cardinals have an edge, but I also think teams like the Cubs, you know, now they have a place to put Kyle Schwarber that isn't awkward, DH, you know, and they'll have a chance to really maximize their offense a little bit more. Their pitching's a little bit suspect compared to, like, the Reds and the Cardinals. But the Cardinals have, you know, Flaherty and nice bullpen, and they have a good lineup. I'm sure Goldschmidt won't have a subpar year this year if he's been staying in shape. So it's going to be those top 3 teams, like the Reds, Cardinals, and Cubs. It should be interesting. The Brewers, you know, they might still be a factor too. And even the Pirates, you know what? If the Pirates get lucky, I wouldn't, you know, they're if I'm their fans, I would be paying attention to the Pirates just because, you know, they have a chance until they don't. They might catch a breeze. Who knows?
It is going to be fascinating to see what happens. The Reds a playoff team, boys?
I think if they expanded the playoffs, you'd say, yeah. But, they were an under 500 team last year. So they brought in a lot. I think they improved themselves a lot. But, again, we don't know what the season is going to be like. It's just so different at 60 games. I think the one thing you can't afford to have a long losing streak. I think they're going to have to manage every game like the playoff game. So we'll see. But I think they definitely have potential to be.
Yeah, they just can't get off to a bad start. There's no time for 1-8 like they did last year, I believe. And playing catch up.
What would an 8-game losing streak be equivalent to over a 162-game season? An 8-game losing streak and 60-game season. That would
like
be
like a 20-game losing streak.
Yeah.
Right. Something. I'm not a math guy, but I think that's about right.
Just under 20. Yeah.
Be devastating.
Not a math guy. You need a math guy.
You gotta have a math guy.
I had a Goldsboro High shirt, John Fay.
Goldsboro High, get some
gotta have
barbecue
a
with some coleslaw on top. Gotta have a math guy. Oh, that's tired. All right, who's your team MVP? Who's the Reds MVP this year? Love putting you guys
Mike
on
Moustakas.
The spot. Mike Moustakas says C. Trent. Will his average be better? You're talking about a better average? You talking about bombs, RBIs? What are we talking about here?
Talking dingers. I'm talking just kind of all around that kind of that glue.
Gotta have a glue guy. I mean, you gotta have a glue guy.
You know, clutch man Moosey. You know, I just for some reason I got a feeling about Moustakas. I don't think the average I'm not worried as much about, but I think he kind of fits in that middle of the lineup and just a clutchy guy.
The analytic people are listening right now are like, average doesn't matter anymore anyways.
Doesn't.
You got to look at DH Nick Castellanos as a MVP candidate. I can't imagine. I mean, I know they'll probably have choices at DH, but if you put him at the DH spot and not have to let him worry about defense – I think he could probably do a lot of damage offensively.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take Geno Suarez and give you guys the field.
Wow.
That's probably nice. Fair.
That's very fair.
I'll take Trevor Bauer. I thought he looked really good in the spring. You can do a lot of weird things with him. And, I mean, after he got called out by Curt Schilling and Aubrey Huff, I think he kind of has to back it up this year.
That was...
You going with a pitcher? Pitcher can't win MVP, Bobby. Don't you know anything?
Yeah. He's going to be lobbying to pitch every fourth day, as he always is.
Easily.
Always is, but in this situation, he's going to be like, hey, if you need to rest guys, you don't need a 6-man rotation. Just pitch me every fourth day and move everyone back.
Because otherwise, I mean, he's going to get 11, 12 starts.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to go 12-0 in those to be the MVP.
That's something that just occurred to me. Will they use starters not on their starting day?
Yeah.
Because if they go 4 innings, so theoretically in 2 days they're going to pitch a bullpen. Could they go an inning or two? But is they do in the playoffs? So, yeah.
Those inning of Luis Castillo?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fastball up to 99, 98 because he's letting it rip for an inning. It's going to be interesting. I know you guys have thought about this ad nauseum, how you're going to cover it, what's going to happen. And as we've said during this podcast, there's just so many unknowns, which makes it more intriguing. We've grown to expect what happens during a baseball season, and it's kind of the same thing most of the time over and over, although there's that old adage, come to a game, you'll see something you've never seen. But for the most part, you know, you see the same thing. So we have no idea what's going to happen over the 60-game season, if it indeed happens, or if they make it to the finish line. So it is going to be very interesting. And guys like the aforementioned Derek Johnson and David Bell, they're going to be earning their money this year because managers are actually going to make a very big difference in how this thing plays out. Strategy is going to come in big time. So, gentlemen, thank you very much for this roundtable discussion. It's been fascinating. I look forward to you still have some time to go before you have to write about games, so creatively filling the content. I look forward to seeing what you guys come up with. All right, boys, thank you very much. Once again, check out the work on, Cincinnati.com, right, boys, from The Inquirer? Cincinnati.com. Yeah. For Mark Sheldon, it is MLB.com. And for C. Trent Rosecrans, it is The Athletic.
Pay for all of them. Well, you can, you know, The Inquirer. Subscribe to The Inquirer. Subscribe to The Athletic. Follow Mark Sheldon.
Venmo
the
Mark.
More the merrier. Support, because you want the breadth. You want different coverage and all five of us here are trying to do different things. And the more of us that are here, the better for the fan. And my friends, Bobby, John, and Mark, and Jim all do different things than the rest of us. And the more of us that are around, the more that you read, the smarter you are, and the better entertained you are. And each of us has their own outlook. And I think it's important to read different kind of looks at things. And thank you, Jim, for having us all here so that, I mean, you see this. And support the Inquirer, support MLB.com, support the Jim Day podcast presented by Kroger and The Athletic. How about that?
Wow. Goodness gracious. Is there a script for
that? I'm
ready
for NASCAR.
You got them all in.
Live, so Marty could text you during it and tell you how weak it is.
Says the man who has read more ad reads than anybody on the face of the earth.
You could book that Marty will be texting me because the games
Marty's
that he had
a big fan of the podcast. I'm sure Marty's a big fan of the podcast and digests everyone the moment it drops, as they say.
Well, he would never admit to it, but he's actually brought up things that only has been on the podcast. So I think he is a little bit of a listener out there. Plus, he's been on a million times.
Did it start with, let me ask you this?
Oh, yes. I got a call the other day, and it started with that very sentence. Let me ask you something. And he didn't say, like, hey, how you doing? It's Marty. What do you doing? Let me ask you something. And I'm like, oh.
I can report that he's doing well. I ran into him at Grader's on Beachmont with his wife, Amanda, and he had his mask on and he was feeling good, but he wasn't going to wait in the drive-thru. He wanted to go straight into the joint and get his ice cream.
Did he pay? Did he have to pay?
I'm guessing he had probably had a gift card, but you know, maybe he paid. I don't know.
All right. Once again, please support Cincinnati Inquirer, Cincinnati.com, MLB.com, and The Athletic. And you'll be reading a lot about from these guys as the season goes on, and we're all going to cross our fingers that indeed 2020 MLB season does happen in its entirety, and we'll be crowning the Cincinnati Reds world champions later on this year. We're going to end on a positive note right there, boys. As always, thanks for joining us here for the Jim Day podcast on this very special Writers' Roundtable, and we'll see you on down the road. So long, everyone.